Back with us is an authority on a very easy to understand area of your health, okay? We're going to talk about your heart and cardiovascular disease. You've heard of stroke? Maybe someone in your family has had one? Get ready to understand it a lot better. February is American Heart Month. It's almost over because it gets drowned out by Valentine's Day, which is the candy heart. We're going to talk about the organic human heart with Dr. Amit Patel. Stand by on StarCom Radio Network, the Ed Till Show, AMFM stations all across America. Our guest is a committee chair with the Society for Cardiovascular Magnetic Resonance. That's a group committed to improving cardiovascular health by advancing the field of cardiovascular magnetic resonance. And I know he'll help us understand what that is. Welcome back, Dr. Amit Patel, to the Ed Till Show on StarCom Radio Network.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Good. What is cardiovascular magnetic resonance?
That's a great question. So it's a way to take a picture of the heart using magnets or an MRI machine, which many people are familiar with. It's a non-invasive test that does not use any radiation, and it really gives us very accurate measurements of the heart size, the heart function. It allows us to evaluate the blood flow in the heart muscle and look for blockages in the arteries of the heart. It allows us to see the heart muscle and determine whether there's scar tissue or other abnormalities in the heart muscle, and lets us look at the heart valves as well.
Now, this being non-invasive, right? Very good there, no trauma to the patient.
Exactly.
Are we deeper in our ability to foresee problems than, say, 10 years ago, where we could see a heart attack or a problem developing long in advance of its arrival, giving us time to do procedures that will prevent it from ever happening?
That's exactly right. I think most of the tests that we are using on a regular basis to diagnose and find heart problems really only detect it when the disease is at its more advanced stages. I can give you an example of this 45-year-old scientist that works at the University of Chicago with me. He was having quite strange symptoms, and he saw a very experienced, outstanding cardiologist who really did a careful history and a physical exam and checked an EKG, which is a type of a test where you look at the electrical rhythm of the heart and ultrasound of the heart, a stress test, even an invasive heart catheterization and a heart biopsy, and they never were able to nail down on what was causing his symptoms. However, when he finally had his cardiovascular magnetic resonance study done, it was very clear that there were these patches of inflammation throughout the heart muscle, and his diagnosis became immediately obvious. He was started on steroids, which you normally wouldn't use to treat heart disease, but his particular heart condition was best treated that way. We knew that his particular heart condition, that since we knew what it was associated with sudden cardiac death, so we gave him a defibrillator, which is a device that monitors his heart rhythm, and sure enough, about a year after we made the diagnosis, he went into one of these life-threatening heart rhythm problems, and the device shocked him out of it and saved his life. And so I use this as an example of how all the other tests that we had really didn't see the disease and couldn't see the disease, but the MRI was able to find it.
Wow. Now, your ability to use varying technologies earlier in the development, right? The things that we know of are the things when you get rushed into the hospital and they're trying to hurry up and do a balloon or an angioplasty. We're trying to get away from that, right? We're just trying to get earlier in the game and not be doing
exactly
the crisis thing, right?
Exactly. I think the problem with the way we're dealing with our medical problems right now is that we're finding all the problems very late in the process when it's difficult to treat, and we're rushing and trying to, you know, prevent heart attacks as they're happening. And really, that's a very expensive and complicated way of managing heart disease. We certainly would like to try to, in fact, prevent it or detect it earlier if we can prevent it. And there's a big effort in trying to get people to be more active. You know, we're a very sedentary society. We want people to exercise more often. We also want, you know, people to improve their diets so that they're eating less salt and sugar in their diets, because that's leading to problems like morbid obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and all of these things are contributing to heart disease. And probably the most cost-effective way of dealing with these problems is by preventing them from happening in the first place.
This is remarkable, I think, maybe not so, from your side of the ledger there, looking at this, that heart disease and episodes are actually declining right now. And we've only been eating chicken, this chicken thing off the beef thing, maybe 20, 25 years. So is it that eating habits can have a dramatic increase in the short term, the way it seems?
Well, I think the I think we haven't been quite as successful at improving our eating habits as we like to think. I think, you know, with the rise of easy, fast, processed foods, fast food, that sort of thing, I think we're probably not eating nearly as well as we think we do, though there is a lot of interest in a lot of people who are trying to eat healthier, certainly, but it's not really reaching all of the population.
Well, right.
That we're making such a good dent into the heart failure epidemic is that we have great medical treatments that we're able to provide for patients. The problem is that we're getting older, and so there are more people who are having heart disease just by the fact that they're getting older, and so the statistics are tough for us.
So that's a mixed signal, right? We have mortality declining, but we have more cases?
Exactly.
All right, got it. What I was going to ask a moment ago, and now you probably, this is a tough call. Genetically, some people get away with this, right? There are some people who eat and behave quite poorly, not at all like we'd like them to, and they don't pay the price. And this can set off a false feeling of people around them and, you know, in their family, they're thin, they're always active. You know how these folks, they don't get anything. And you say, but look at all that bad behavior. Then the other guy who's struggling says, geez, you know, I'm not even making the kind of progress I need to make here. This other guy's getting away with murder, the way he eats, the way he lives. That plays a big role in it, right? The kind of gene pool you come from.
Exactly. That's just a great point that you bring up. I think there's a balance between our individual genetics and the environment that we put our genes in. You could have, you know, the opposite of what you said. You could have a genetic predisposition to having a heart attack because maybe your mom had a heart attack and your grandmother had a heart attack, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll have to have a heart attack. We can still, just by kind of really aggressively having a healthy lifestyle, exercise, diet, et cetera, reduce your risk of heart attack by 50%. And the opposite is also true. Some people just have great genes, and they're not going to get into trouble. The problem is that we haven't really figured out a good way to really know exactly who has the bad genes and who doesn't. And you can't really rely on just looking at your parents from the past, because our parents, you know, they had very different lifestyles. They were much more active than we were. So even if they had good genes, they also had really great lifestyles, whereas we may have good genes or bad genes, and then to top it off, a much unhealthier lifestyle.
And that can happen, right? Just to make that point clear to people, you can actually, overtake your good DNA with enough bad behavior. No DNA is impervious, right?
I think so. I mean, I think that that's exactly right. You can manage to overtake your DNA, as you said.
Do you think this screen era that we live in, sedentary, is, you know, it's sad. Sedentary is not really welcome everywhere now. There are offices where they're making people stand up at their desk. There are some companies, but for the most part, generationally, there's just a lot of sitting, whether it's on public transportation or it's at the coffee house. We're witnessing more sitting. That's not good, right? We need to get them up. The screen's not helping. The iPads, the iPhones, the constant checking and reading of the screen, that's not helping us, right?
Absolutely. I think that there's no question that our sedentary lifestyle, the screens, not getting out there, kids not getting out there and playing, rather playing video games instead of playing with each other outside. You know, it starts from the very beginning, and then even our work, even getting to work, right? I live in Chicago, and many of my colleagues are sitting in traffic for an hour getting to work.
Right.
And so it's in so many different ways.
No, absolutely. You know, I can't thank you enough for this visit today. You're brilliant, and you're in such an exciting field, but at the same time, you're really accessible. Do you like answering ordinary people's questions, or do you like, you know, having a conference with other doctors like yourself? Because you seem to be comfortable with us.
Well, I enjoy both of them. I think, you know, talking to just everybody helps me make an impact, a greater impact on patients, right? I can, if I were to come up with some special cure that I can only speak in a language that no one can understand, it won't really be very useful. However, if I can try to communicate with more people, then, you know, that allows me to do my job better. And,
oh,
and it's fun,
yeah,
to know what most people are thinking, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know something, believe me, we love it. But, you know, you're a little bit humble when you make it sound like it comes easy. A lot of your colleagues, it's a struggle. There are people who are just really good in the lab. But then when the people come, it doesn't register. You seem to light up with answers and information, and you seem to enjoy questions, which is something we enjoy, you know, as the public, because in the old days, you didn't really ask a lot of questions of the doctor. You just thought of him or her as this omniscient, they know every, and, you know, you were just happy to get out of there. The minute it was over, you'd be like, I did it. Nothing bad happened. I'm done. See, bye, Dr. Bill. You know, and you just, from a distance, you can't wait to get the hell out of there. You seem like
the
fellow where you're like, Mr. Till, I have another appointment. That'll be enough now that it was 8 questions. I would be like that if I was meeting with you. I would just bend your ear incessantly. Well, thanks a lot for your visit today. If people want to follow up with you, I'm going to give, is it scmr.org?
Absolutely. That's the Society of Cardiovascular Magnetic Resonance, and it's a group of people who are engineers, doctors, and cardiologists and radiologists all working together to really try to identify, come up with ways to more accurately find heart disease and to identify it earlier so that we can initiate our treatments sooner rather than later.
Dr. Patel is an associate professor of medicine and radiology at the great University of Chicago. You know, I was a Chicagoan a couple of decades back. I used to live up near where the river, it goes under the bridge there on Michigan Avenue near the bank building. Yeah, I used to live right next door to that Wrigley building bank. He built that building as a thing for his wife's wedding cake. It's supposed to be the wife's. Did you know this? The gum guy, Mr. Wrigley, you know, the chewing gum magnate, he built that building, and he also set it on an angle that you can see the Wrigley building no matter which direction you're walking at it from. Isn't that cool?
It's probably one of the most beautiful parts of the city. Just with the Wrigley Building there and the Tribune Tower, it's amazing.
It is breathtaking on those spring and autumn evenings, right? You go for a little walk. All right, Dr. Absolutely. Patel, I could keep you around all day. You know that? If I had my way, you would come and join us at StarCom and be the medical director of the network. But you have more important things to do, I know. All right, well, have a great weekend. And once again, people can follow up with you. It's the Society's website. It's scmr.org. Thanks again. Have a great day.
You're welcome. You take care.
You bet.